Everyone could please turn off their cell phones. They have put on silence. Okay, and we're very fortunate and is with us tonight. Just had a beautiful Shabbat here at the shul. And everyone knows that my life is divided at this moment between the beliefs on Shabbat and the feeling during the week. And tonight's topic is falling in love, staying in love. How do I decide who's the right one for me? Without any further ado, this is the last.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Shabbat Shalom, everyone.
Shabbat Shalom.
So I'm Lori Palatnik. I'm originally from Toronto. I live near Washington, D.C. now.
Woohoo!
Yeah?
Maryland.
Yeah. I live in Rockville, Maryland. And I'm... See, what's an interesting fact about me? That's what I'm saying. Interesting fact about me is I only have one kidney, so I gave mine away to a woman I'd never met before. That's a whole different talk that I gave on Friday night. So that's an interesting fact about me. All right. So if a couple comes to me and they are about to get married, my husband's a rabbi, he's marrying them. So my first meeting with them is, I call it scare them straight. That's what I call it. And I don't tell them that. They think they're coming to me to learn about the wedding ceremony, but really I want to talk to them about marriage. A rabbi once said, Rabbi Richard Mandel Toronto once said, if only people spent as much time planning their marriages as they do their weddings, we'd all be a lot better off. So this young, naive couple is in front of me, and I asked them the following question. I said, of all the people walking to the chuppah, how many get divorced? And what did they say? 50%. And then I asked them, of the 50% who stayed married, what percentage would you say have a happy marriage?
25%.
10%. What? 15%. You say 15? Oh, 50. 50%. Anybody else? Have a guess? 50. You would say 50%?
7 to 10.
So in a married audience, I get as low as 10 and as high as 50. So I once did a Shabbaton for some young teenagers, and 120 teenagers in me, that was special, in Detroit. And I asked them this question, and who are they thinking of?
Their parents.
Their parents. So they said 1%, 2%, all the 50%. So let's be very generous. Let's be very generous, and we'll say that 50% of the 50% who stay married have a happy marriage. We're being very generous. We're being very generous. That means of all the people walking to the chuppah, maybe one quarter are going to come out with a good marriage. So I say to them, you don't want to be a statistic, so let's learn. Let's learn. So I share with them some of the wisdom, hopefully I'm sharing with you tonight. So the first thing you have to do is you have to define your terms. You want to be happy, what's happy? You want to be successful, what's success? So you have to define love and you have to define marriage. And when I first started speaking about this, that's the order I went in. What is love? What is marriage? Hold on, I just want to... Is anybody warm here?
Yeah.
Okay, so does anybody want to help me put the window? So first you have to define what is love. So I used to speak in that order. What is love? What is marriage? Right? Which sounds the right order. Love, marriage, baby, carriage, right? But I realized quickly, no. Wrong order. You can't define... Marriage, you can't define...
No, we really need air, though. It's going to go way off.
Excellent. Okay? You'll be a little cool, but they're dying. Okay. We did this afternoon already. So first, why do you have to define marriage first and not love? So, my husband and I, anybody who's been married for a few years, can relate to this. When my husband and I go to a wedding and the bride and groom get up and they talk about how much they love each other. I love him, I love her. Okay, so we're sitting there going, yeah, right, yeah. They want to know what love is. They don't know what love is. You can't compare the love I have for my husband, that I had for my husband on our wedding day, to the love I have for him now 25 years later, five kids later, and everything we've gone through, that was like a joke back then. I knew I was onto something. But you can't do what is love. First, you have to do what is marriage. So what is marriage? The Jewish definition of marriage is very easy to remember. It's oneness. One. One, 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 one. One. It says in Kabbalah, before you're born, you're one soul, and God splits you. You're half the soul, you go off into this world, and your other half, your soulmate, your zivug, also goes off into this world. When God splits you, if you imagine your soul is like a circle, he doesn't split you like this. He splits you like this. It's like two pieces of a puzzle that fit together. That means you have qualities that they don't have, and they have qualities that you don't have. That's why opposites attract. It's a very common tale. When I ask a single person, this happens on a daily basis, when they come to me, like, do you know anybody from me? I go, what are you looking for? What are you looking for? What kind of person? They almost always describe themselves. They do. And I say to them, I had a guy in L.A. the other day, and he described himself. I said, you just described yourself. He's like, oh, yeah. Kind of like, well, what's wrong with that? I like me, okay? So the whole idea of marriage is that you're going to realize your potential through this union. You can't realize your potential if you marry somebody just like you. It's just more you, by a mirror. The person you marry who's going to help you realize your potential is going to be different than you are. If you think about your parents, anybody's parents here still married? Oh, good, okay, there. Would you say that they're different? Yes? Different? Opposites attract. Extroverts tend to marry introverts. People who are very artsy and flowy tend to marry people who are very detailed and organized. People who like the thermostat up marry people who like the thermostat down. Mm-hmm. And that's life. Why? Because you're half a soul and you're yearning for completion. The mistake that people make in marriage is the same qualities that you were so attracted to in the other person that were different than yours are the same qualities that later on in marriage make you nuts. Why can't you be more organized? Why can't you be more social? Why can't you be more... Instead of resenting those qualities, celebrate those qualities. Those qualities are there and sent to you to help you to realize your potential. When I was first dating, people set me up with these outgoing personality guys. Guys like me. And the dates were fun. But after a few dates, I realized, I can't marry this guy. Can you imagine coming to my house for Shabbos? There's me, and there's a guy like me, you leave like this, okay? It's too much me. My husband is much quieter, steadier, deeper. So he's much more social and happy because he married me. And I'm much deeper because I married my husband. Do you understand? He will always be an introvert, and I will always be an extrovert. All right. So marriage is oneness. Marriage is oneness. Under the chuppah, you become one soul. It's not just the pretty things the rabbis say. There's nothing. What's going on in the chuppah has nothing to do with the rabbi, nothing to do with the videographer. It's two souls becoming one. In Judaism, one and one equals one. You become one. And you have to live your marriage as one. You have to make choices based on the fact that we are in this together. Marriage is not a partnership. Marriage is a merger. Anybody here in business? MBAs? Yeah? So what's the difference between a partnership and a merger? A partnership is, I got the know-how, you've got the capital, we're going to get together, right? I know what I want out of this, you know what you want out of this, but after a while, now I got some capital, you got the know-how, and if I'm not getting what I want, so we dissolve the partnership. A merger is not my thing and your thing, it's our thing. We're in this together. Don't get into this, you know, it's a 50-50 thing. It's not a 50-50 thing. It's a 100%, 100% thing. Everybody's putting in their all. There are sometimes my husband picks up the slack in certain areas, and sometimes I do, because we're in this together. There's none of this, I do the dishes on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you do them Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday, but we have guests on Friday, so you really owe me, and it's all this. No, we're in this together. We're one. That's what marriage is. What is love? There are three aspects to the definition of love. Number one, love is the emotion that you feel when you appreciate the virtues of another person and you identify them with those virtues. I'll repeat. Love is the emotion that you feel when you appreciate the virtues of another person and you identify them with those virtues. That's love. You see this with children. You see this with kids. If I ask a pregnant woman, are you going to love your baby? What would she say?
Yes.
Sure, she's going to love her baby. And I ask her, well, how do you know? What, you love every baby? Some baby are a little sniffly nose brat, okay? It's okay. Do you love every kid? You don't love every kid. How do you know you're not going to get one of those? How do you know? You might get one of those. But that mother knows that she's going to love that baby even before the baby's born. Why? Because it's hers? What if she said, what if the kid's adopted? You're going to love your adopted baby? Yes, it's all part of you. How do you know you're going to love your baby? Because you made a choice even before you held that baby in your arms that I'm going to love this baby. Boy, girl, extrovert, introvert, athletic, creative. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You made a choice. What do we learn from this? Love is a choice. What's the choice? To choose to focus in on the person's virtue. It's your choice. My husband is very deep and very complex. He's a creative genius. He's always thinking big ideas. He's unbelievable. But he's like kind of like the absent-minded professor. He forgets his keys. He loses his keys. He forgets his passwords. When I travel all over the world and I speak. When I arrive back home at the airport, often he picks me up. Great. But a common tale is that he picks me up and I'm tired after this long trip. And we go to find the car, and what happens? He can't find the car every time. Okay? Like he cannot find the car. And I was always, again, you can't find the car? And this went on for a long time until I realized, Lori, it's my mistake. I reframed. And I decided that the first 30 to 40 minutes after I meet my husband at the airport is a date. And what's the date? We go for a walk to find the car. Okay? And as we're on this date, I talk about my trip and we catch up on what's going on. If we find the car, it's a bonus, but I don't expect it. Do you hear the difference? That's my choice. You can't change people. You can only change your reaction to them. And often when you change your reaction to them, that often creates an environment where they can change. The last few times, he found the car right away. Right? But all those years of me going, I can't believe it did nothing. It's your choice. Who knows my kids' good qualities better than I do? Nobody. Who knows your good qualities better than your parents? Probably no one. Your parents really, even if you don't believe it, they really do know you. Who knows your not-so-good qualities better than your parents? Probably no one. But if I ask your parents about you, they're going to tell me all these good things. If you ask me about my kids, I'll say, oh, my Shoshana's this, my Debbie's this, my emotions. I'm not just a bragging Jewish mother. That's how I see them. Do I know, does that mean I'm blind to their negative qualities? No, not at all. I know my kids' negative qualities. But when I think about them, I focus in on their virtues and I identify them with those virtues. That's how I see them. It doesn't mean you're blind. It means you chose to focus in on their virtues. Love is a choice every day, every hour, every moment. It's your choice. A lot of times people get divorced because they stop choosing. Or they stop choosing to focus in on the good. They chose to instead focus in on the negative. All right. So that's the first aspect of love. Love is the emotion that you feel when you focus in on the virtues of another person and you identify them with those virtues. The second definition of love. Love is what's important to you is important to me. I spoke in London, England a few years ago at a big event, and there was other speakers there, including David Weiss. David Weiss is the head screenwriter of Shrek 2. He's a Jewish guy from L.A., and he had a whole Jewish journey, it's a whole story. And he told the screenwriters that the theme of Shrek 2 is what he learned from his rabbi, who learned from our rabbi, that love is what's important to you is important to me. And if you read Shrek 2, you'll see the theme that goes through it. So I learned this very much from my parents growing up. Talk about opposites attract. My parents are very different people. Let me describe my parents to you to get a feel. My mother's idea of a great vacation is backpacking in Nepal on 24 hours notice. She's almost 80 years old. Okay, I'm not kidding. She's very adventurous, very artsy, very impulsive. My father's idea of a great vacation is an air-conditioned bus tour of Miami he's been planning for 6 months. Get it? Very different people. I'm a very interesting combination of my parents. I have a very adventurous side from my mother and a very practical side from my father. How did they make it work all these years? So my mother, they lived this. They lived this. What's important to you is important to me. My mother loves the arts, so they have a subscription to the Toronto Symphony. They live in Toronto. And every month, my father goes to the symphony with my mother, holds her hand, and tries not to fall asleep. Okay? My father, he's a real guy's guy. He loves the Toronto Maple Leafs. The hockey is the national religion of Canada. My mother goes to the Toronto Maple Leafs games with my father, holds his hand, and tries to pretend this is not stupid. Okay? As love is, what's important to you is important to me. Our middle son, Moshi, we have five kids, our middle son, Moshi. So Moshi's our jock. He loves really into sports. Like, love sports. We don't have a television at home, but when I travel, I always turn on ESPN. Why? So I can come home and say, Moshi, I saw Shaq, and his neck is like this. And I saw Kobe and all his tattoos. And I saw the mailman. You know why they call him the mailman? Because he delivers. I know this stuff. Okay? So when I say this to Moshi, his eyes light up. Why? He knows I don't love sports. But I love my Moshi. And love is what's important to you. It's important to me. Got it? Third definition of love. Rabbi Bessler asked in his work, Strive for Truth, the philosophical question, does loving lead to giving, or does giving lead to loving? I love you, so I give to you, or the more I give to you, the more I love you. And the Jewish answer is, the more you give, the more you love. You see this the way God made us having children. So I was never one of those people growing up who babysat, like really into like little kids, you notice from my Snively Brad story, okay? Happen to love my own children. So when I had our first child, Shoshana, I was completely overwhelmed at how helpless she was. They handed me this baby in the hospital. I never changed a diaper until my own kid. I always thought, like, I couldn't believe they let me leave the hospital. Like, they let me leave the hospital with a human being? Okay, there should have been an alarm that went off. Mother who doesn't know what she's doing, okay? It's unbelievable. You need a license to fish, to hunt, to drive a car, but you can just raise a human being. You see why people are messed up today. with no experience or training. So I couldn't believe how helpless she was. Newborn baby. They can't do anything on their own. She couldn't feed on her own. She couldn't clean up on her own. She couldn't roll over on her own. They can't even burp. You got to burp them, okay? Why did God make it that way? In the animal kingdom, a deer has a farm. The farm's a little shaky. Nurses a bit. Goats have a life. Babies are completely helpless. Why? So we'll give, and we'll give, and we'll give, and we'll give. And what do you get back for the first few months? Oh, you get something back. Sleep, no sleep, okay? Throw up down your back and diarrhea down your front, okay? Doesn't that sound like fun? And you love this baby more than life itself. You throw yourself in front of a truck for this baby. Why? Because the more you give, the more you love. If you want to love somebody more, give to them. Whether it's your roommate, or it's your sister, or your mother-in-law, the more you give, the more you love. Representative Sadie Twersky, she's from Milwaukee. She's a real representative. She's the real deal. So I asked her, before I got married, to give me some marital advice. I actually, if you ever want to spend time with a speaker, you offer to the organization to drive them to the airport. Because then you have them privately. You have private time with them. Because otherwise, when you're a speaker, after everybody wants to talk to you, a question, you can't get near them. So it was many years ago, it was like 25 years ago in Toronto, and Representative Twersky flew in, and she spoke, and I offered to drive her to the airport. So I drive her to the airport, I tell her my whole life story, and then in 10 minutes, and then I get out, and I said, if you could give me one piece of marital advice, what would it be? And she says, I'm going to tell you the advice that my brother-in-law gave me the night before I got married. He said, you should wake up every morning, and the first thing you should think is, what can I give to my spouse today? And I was like, oh, okay. He goes, no, boy. Okay? You think that it's easy. It's not. One extra act of giving a day. One small little thing, it could be a tiny little thing, adds up to hundreds of thousands of giving in a marriage. And she says, unless God forbid you're in an abusive marriage, don't worry about receiving. If you're in giving mode, it's contagious. Everybody wants to give. I gave this assignment to some married women in a class in Denver, Colorado. I was living there for a few years. And I said to them, okay, so the assignment this week is we're all going to do one extra act of giving to our husbands this week, and we'll report back. So the week goes by, they come back together, and I said, who did the homework? So one woman says, I did. I said, do you want to share? She said, yes. She goes, it was Wednesday night, and I hadn't done anything that day. And I realized, oh my gosh, I hadn't done my homework. So I was making a cup of tea, so I said to my husband, honey, I'm making a cup of tea. Would you like a cup of tea too? He's like, yeah, I would. Thank you so much. The next day, he was making a cup of tea. He said, sweetheart, I'm making a cup of tea. Would you like a cup of tea too? She's like, yes, I would. This works, she says. Okay? Don't wait to love someone and then give to them. Give to them, and that will bring love. So that's the third definition of love. You got it? Okay. Now we're going to get to the three questions you have to ask yourself in order to know it's the right person. Three questions you have to ask yourself to know it's the right person. Reverend Heller, Reverend Zipporah Heller, she's a scholar at Neve Yerushalayim in Israel. And she's asked this question once, how do I know it's the right person? She's asked it 1,000 times a year. How do I know this is the one? This is the most important decision you will ever make in your life, who you marry. So it better be a good one. This can either propel you forward towards your goals in life, or can completely mess you up. These three questions, there's no question that's more important than the other. Why? Because you have to answer yes to all three. So there's not one, it's not in priority order. Here's the questions. You ready? Question number one. Oh, God, for those of us who are married, if you answer no to one of these questions, don't leave and say to your husband, I knew it all along, the Lord confirmed it, okay? For those who are married, these are the three areas you have to put a lot of time and effort into your marriage, okay? Okay, question number one, do you have the same goals? And I don't mean, we both want to get married, or live in the suburbs, have a three-car garage, you go north once a year, south once a year. I mean meaningful life goals. Not just, what does our house look like? What does our house feel like? Not just what do we want to have children, what values do we want to share with our children? Meaningful life goals. What do we want to contribute to our community, to our people? My day-to-day goals are very different than my husband's. I'm doing a carpool, I'm teaching a chapter for my publisher, I'm teaching a class, I'm going up a larger song, I'm doing another carpool. My husband's a rabbi. He does rabbi stuff all day. He marries people, he buries people, okay? But our life goals together are the same. We both want to do something tremendous for Jewish people, and we may go about it in different ways. And that's not just a nice thing for the Jewish people, that's great for our marriage. When I was dating, I'm extremely idealistic. I'm very idealistic. And when I'm dating to get married, I remember like going out, being set up, you know, doctors, lawyers, accountants. But I realized I can't marry these guys. For me, for some people, being married to an accountant is the best thing ever. But you have to know yourself. Unless you know who you are and where you're going, you don't know who to go with. You're just spinning your wheels. It starts with you. Somebody came up to me and they said, after my dating workshop, somebody came up to me and said, well, I don't know if the guy I'm dating has the same meaningful life goals that I do, because I don't know what my meaningful life goals are. Got it? Right? It starts with you. So for me, I couldn't marry an accountant. Why? What would I say to him at the end of the day? So honey, everything add up? Okay? Like, I don't know what we're talking about. For me, personally, because I'm, again, very driven and wanted to do something great for the Jewish people. I needed somebody who didn't just think that was nice. I needed him to share that same goal, too. So first, you've got to figure it out for yourself. All right, so number one is, do you have the same meaningful life goals? Number two, are you physically attracted to each other? The Talmud says you're not allowed to marry somebody unless you're attracted to them. This is a very, 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 very important part of a marriage. And not just for the first few years until you have a baby and then da 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 da. Okay? This is actually supposed to be getting stronger in a marriage and not weaker. The Torah says when a man is with his wife, in terms of physical intimacy, it says then he knew her. The more knowledge, the more love. The more love, the more desire for each other. But men and women often look upon this in a different way. I'm going to generalize now. What does generalize mean? There are exceptions, okay? But in general, in terms of physical attraction, women look upon it, in terms of men, very much inside out, and men, it's very much outside in. If, imagine you're at a party, and you're with your girlfriend. I'm going to talk to the girls right now. You ready? Just listen in. You're at a party, and you're with your girlfriend, all right? And you see a guy across the room, and he's hot. Right? Which is a very regional term, I have to tell you. So I speak all over the world. If I said he's hot in England, they would say turn off the air conditioning. Okay? In England, they say he's fit. In Costa Rica, they say he's guapo. In Brazil, he's a cat. Right? That's what they say, he's a cat. So I was speaking in Rochester, and there were deaf people in the audience, and there was an interpreter who was interpreting for the deaf, like sign language, beside me. And I said, how would you say that in sign language? So it's like this, hot, okay? All right, so you see, no matter what you call, you see a guy, talk to him, he's hot, all right? And your girlfriend says, he's hot, isn't he? And so you're like, oh my gosh, he's so hot. And your girlfriend says, he's my cousin. You want to meet him? You're like, oh my gosh, I totally want to meet him. So now you're going across the room, you're like, oh no, 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 I can't do it. Okay. And then you get there, and your heart's beating out of your chest, and you have no saliva in your mouth. Your friend introduces you to the guy, and he slips away. Now you're talking to the guy. A few minutes in, you realize, porch lights on, nobody's home. Okay? Somebody said, body by Daedalus, brains by Mattel. Get it? Okay? For a woman, in general, you're not even attracted to him anymore. A guy, it's the opposite. Right? You see the girl across the room, she's hot, he talks to her, there's nothing upstairs, he still wants to be with her. Okay? Very much. Why? Because for a woman, it's very much inside out, and for a man, it's outside in. In marriage, you see this as well. In general, there are exceptions, for a woman, how he treats us outside the bedroom is directly related to how we will treat him inside the bedroom. If he's nice and giving and sensitive and supportive outside the bedroom, that directly relates to how we relate to him inside the bedroom. Got it? For a man, it's the opposite. How she treats him inside the bedroom is directly related to how he treats her outside the bedroom. Do you hear the problem? Okay? Somebody has to make the first move here. Got it? Don't wait for it to be the other person. And romance changes as marriage goes along. What you think is romantic now is really not what is so romantic later on in marriage. So I'll give you an example. So I'm one of those people that I don't mind doing laundry, I don't like putting it away. I don't mind shopping for groceries, I don't like putting it away. I don't mind loading a dishwasher, I hate unloading dishwashers. It's just me, okay? So we were married, we had 5 little children, and we didn't have any household help at the time. And one night it was late, and I don't like to wake up to a messy kitchen, so I decide I'm going to do the dishes before I go to sleep. Everybody's asleep in the house. I go to unload the dishwasher, which I hate to do, right? I hate unloading the dishwasher. I open the dishwasher, it's empty. Now, my children are tiny, I have no household help. So who, without me asking, unloaded the dishwasher? My husband. And I have to tell you, I got this wave of romance for him at that moment. And I was thinking, like, this is sick, okay? Like, this is romance? An unloaded dishwasher? Yes. Yes. I spoke in Minneapolis a while ago, and the evening talk was couples, married couples around candlelit tables with wine. And I gave this talk, the version of this talk, and I remember the next morning I met, and I had a class just with the wives, just the women. They told me that night after the talk, they went home, their husbands ran to the dishwasher, unloaded, and went, look, honey, look. Okay? So this is a very, very important part. Now, when you're dating, some of you are familiar with the concept of Nagia, that the idea of that women and men, before they're married, when they're dating, should not have physical intimacy. You heard of this idea? Okay. What's going on here? I remember my sister, she became religious before I did. We didn't grow up religious. I was in my early 20s when I started my Jewish journey. So my sister is the first one in our family to become religious. And she was this religious fanatic in my eyes, and she got engaged to this guy, and she told me that she's never touched him. Right? She's getting married in a few weeks. She told me they've known each other for a few months. She told me she's never touched him. And I go, no, this is before I was religious. So I said, well, come on. I know you haven't had sex, okay, because I know that this is what you guys do, but you've never touched him and you're going to marry him? What are you, crazy? I said, I said, you're supposed to test drive a car before you drive it, right? So I remember I said to my sister, what happens on the wedding night if you're incompatible, if you're sexually incompatible? And she said to me, why would we be? So I was thinking, like, she's going to wake up in the morning and smell the coffee, okay? But what was she saying to me? She's saying that if we have dated for months, and we have talked on the phone, like they were in different cities, right? 1,000 hours on the phone. And we walked, and we talked, and we have the same goals, and we are attracted to each other. And when we had conflict, we had to work things out. And we trust each other. If it's not the star-spangled banner on the wedding night, we have what it takes to make it work. My mother is a therapist. She says when people come to her, married couples, and they're having trouble in the bedroom, she goes, that's not your problem, that's the symptom of your problem. Now let's talk about your problem. What's going on in the bedroom is a barometer of your marriage. If everything's great in the bedroom, but outside the bedroom, you don't have that communication, that love, that trust, those meaningful life goals, this is not going to last very long. What's going on in the bedroom is not going to last very long. So when you're dating, once you bring physical intimacy into the relationship, clarity flies out the window. Your goal when you're dating is clarity. Clarity is everything. This is the most important decision you will ever make in your life. And once physicality comes in, clarity is gone. I don't care who you are. Guy, girl, so mature, immature, I don't care. That's the reality. You don't have to touch each other in order to know that you're physically attracted to each other. A guy knows 10 minutes into the first date. A girl takes longer. Why? Again, it's very much inside out. When I first met my husband, he wasn't exactly Rabbi GQ, all right? But I have to tell you that the more I got to know him, the more physically attracted I became to him. Oh, he's so cute when he smiles. Why? Because I got to know who the essence of who he was. And the physical attraction is reflective of that essence. Do you hear? But for a guy, you know, he really knows 10 minutes in. Is she cute? Like, am I attracted or am I not? It really doesn't matter. Everything else is very important in terms of success in a marriage, but physical attraction is sort of something that it's not rocket science. Got it? In the Jewish world, there are the laws of, it's called Taharat HaMishpacha, laws of the mikveh, where this is basically an on-again, off-again situation in the month, that once a woman gets her menstrual cycle, she separates from her husband in terms of physical intimacy. And then she prepares, about 12 days later, she prepares and goes to the mikvah. She immerses in the mikvah, and then she renews that relationship with her husband. This is one of the proofs that the Torah was written by man, but not written by man, but written by God. Because if man wrote the Torah, he would not write this in. Okay? After months, he can't be with his wife. God was very smart. God was very smart. I know people who are having trouble in the bedroom, and go to a therapist who specializes in this area, a sex therapist. And they will tell, and I was curious, a couple of people I know I was very close with, and I asked them, so what happened, like when you went to the therapist? So they both told me the same story. So the therapist said, the first thing the therapist said to them was, abstinence. Now you can't touch each other. And slowly, 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 she brought them back together. God does this every month. He says, abstinence. And slowly, 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 he brings you back together. The Talmud says to a man to observe the laws of mikvah so that your wife will be like a bride to you every month. That you have the desire for her every month like you have the desire for her on your wedding night. You can have something all the time, it's not so desirable anymore. Again, you don't have to sleep with somebody to know you're attracted to them. But once you are together, if you can be together all the time, it loses some of that desire. Third question. Oh, before I go on to the third question, one more part about physical attraction. So here's a mistake that people make once they get married. And it's not the mistake you make when you date. When you're dating, how do you look on a date? Great, you look the best, okay? And how do you act? The best, okay? Right? Everything's so great. Get it? Okay, life isn't always so great. People get fatter, people get older, people leave the toilet seat up, and people throw their socks on the floor, okay? Life isn't always so great. So there's going to be a lot going on there in order to keep the attraction strong. But don't take that part for granted. How do we dress when we go out, girls? Nice to greet yourself, but you all look great, okay? How do we dress? When we go out, we look great, right? And the mistake that we make in marriage is when we go home, right? When we go out, we dress up, and when we go home, we dress down. So it's a mistake, because your husbands are going to be out there all day long interacting with women who went out, and they look great, and then he comes home to you, all right? Now, it's not like my husband's going to come home and see me in my sweats and call up the basin for a guest, okay? Right? But this is chip, 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 chip away at the fragile maison called your marriage. And enough chips cause a crack, and enough cracks can cause a break. Rebbetzin Weinberg, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg of blessed memory, his wife, who just passed away a couple of weeks ago, so she came to Toronto many years ago, and she met with the Eishet Torah, Rebbetzin, and she was very strong about this, to not take this part of your marriage for granted. She told us the following story. She said every night when Rav Yaakov would drive up to the driveway, she'd hear him drive up to the driveway, she would run to the bathroom, put on fresh lipstick, spray perfume, fix her hair, and go to the door to greet her husband. Night after night, that's what she did. Rav Yaakov would drive in the driveway, lipstick, perfume, hair, go to the door and greet her husband. And her kids saw this night after night. This is what she did. She says one night, she was very tired, and she fell asleep on the couch, and her husband drove up into the driveway, and the kids panicked. Tati's home, and mommy's asleep on the couch. Then she woke up, and they were smearing lipstick all over her mouth, and spraying perfume in her eyes. Now, it's a funny story, but listen to the message. Their kids saw night after night that their mother cared more what their father thought of her than anyone else in the world. You can imagine what kind of marriages they have. Okay. So let's move on to the third question. Okay? Third question. Third question is different for a guy than for a girl. For the girl, we take her aside. I don't know, is this the one, is this the one, right? Same meaningful life goal, physical attraction. And then we look her in the eye without the guy in the room, and we ask her, do you respect him? And she says yes immediately. Without hesitating or looking away, then this is it. But if I say, do you respect him? And she says, yeah, I worry. Or if I say, do you respect him? And she says, yes, but she looks away when she answers, then I also worry. I had a woman come to me in Denver, is this the one, is this the one? First two questions, yes, yes. I go, do you respect him? She goes, yes. And she glanced away when she said it. I go, you looked away. She goes, no, I didn't, because people always know they're doing it, but I'm looking for it. Now, I don't have a doctorate in behavioral science, but I know if I ask you a question and you look away when you answer, you're lying. Okay? You're lying. So I called, and it turns out there was something about him she did not respect. She married him anyway, and a year later she divorced him. For a guy, it's a very, 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 very big deal that his wife respects him. He can be the CEO of a corporation and people are bowing down to him all day long. But if he comes home and he feels his wife doesn't respect him, it's the beginning of the end. Why is it such a big deal for a man that his wife respects him? I have no idea.
He has a big ego.
Yeah, ego, culture, you could name many things, right? Society, it doesn't matter. It just is. What does it matter why? It just is. So ladies, I'm going to give you respect 101, okay? This is basic respecting your guy. If you're not doing this, don't even come to me. I don't want to talk to you. Okay? This is basic respecting your God. Imagine, for whatever reason, Oprah Winfrey has chosen you for, like, an in-house camera interview. They come into your place, right? They're going to interview you. Right? This is the Oprah's coming, the camera crew. How do you look?
Great.
You look great, right? What does your voice look like?
Great.
Great, okay? Now you're on the phone with your friend, waiting for Oprah to come, okay? Ding dong, oh my gosh, Oprah's here, I'll call you back. Oprah's so good, I'm not going to okay? Regular day, Oprah ain't coming, okay? Oprah's not coming. Regular day, you're on the phone with your friend. Your guy walks in. When your guy walks in, get off the phone. And he should hear you say, oh my gosh, my guy is here. I gotta go. Click. What message are you sending to your guy? He's more important than what? Than anyone else at the end of this phone. There are two exceptions. Number one, it's his mother. Okay? Then you go, it's your mother. you hand him the phone. Okay? Second exception, it's an emergency. What's an emergency? Not that your girlfriend had a bad hair day. What's an emergency? People don't realize that rabbis and rabbitsons also have lives. We have lives too. I was living in Denver, Colorado, and I remember I had a week that was. I had a week where everything hit the fan. Okay? It was just one of those weeks. And it was Shabbos morning. I'm at shul, and during Kiddush, a woman comes up to me. She goes, Lori, I called you 3 times this week, and you didn't return one of my calls. I go, my dear, I had one of those weeks, but unless you left me a message, my husband's having an affair, or I'm converting to Catholicism, I ain't calling you back, okay? So the next time she left me this message, she goes, hi, Lori, it's so-and-so, off to mass, call me, okay? Okay? That's an emergency. Otherwise, get off the phone. Get off the phone. That's respect 101. Did you ever go to a wedding, and Uncle Lou gets up to make a toast to the bride? He says to the bride, honey, I'm going to give you a piece of marital advice. Treat him like a king. He'll treat you like a queen. Thank you, Uncle Lou. I heard something much better from a woman educator in Toronto. Her name is Sherry Wise. She says, treat him like a man you respect, and he will become a man that you respect. If you think about how you would treat anybody you tremendously respect who's coming over, how you would treat them, you would greet them at the door. You would ask them if they would like anything. Right, you would listen to them. You would pay attention to them. Treat them like a man you respect. You will become a man that you respect. Okay, that's what we ask the girl. Do you respect him? What do we ask the guy? Because what does a girl need? What does a guy need? A guy needs to be respected. What does a girl need? A girl needs to be loved. Loved. A guy wants to be loved but needs to be respected. And a girl wants to be respected but needs to be loved. So what do we ask the guy? Will you be happy making her happy for the rest of your life? Every guy needs a job, and a guy's job in marriage is to make his wife happy. That's your job. If your wife is not happy, you're not doing your job. But how do you make her happy? Girls are a little bit complicated when it comes to this, all right? Guys are very simple. 1, 2, 3, and they're happy. Okay? They're really not. They have very few needs. You meet those needs, it's done. Okay? Women are not like that. It's much more complicated. So girls, you have to give them a break and help them out to understand what makes you happy. They're not mind readers. You're not going to marry Preston. Okay? He really doesn't know. But you have to do it in a way that builds him and doesn't break him. Because what's your job? You know, marriage's job is to make you happy. What's your job? I asked my rebbitzin, what's my job in marriage besides the obvious? She said, your job is to take a good guy and make him great. And I asked, how do I do that? She said, by pointing out his mistakes in the very best way possible. And most of the time, it's not telling him you're making a mistake. That breaks him. You have to be smart. So here's a real example. So I met my husband 25 years ago at the beginning of January. We got engaged at the end of January. We got married in June. Now it's October. It's the first year of our marriage, and it's October, and it's my birthday. My husband remembered it was my birthday. You got to do math. And he hands me my present. What do you think my husband got me for the first birthday that we're celebrating together as husband and wife? A food processor. The guys are like, what, that's that? Go to oneself, okay? Whether it's a processor or a blender or a toaster or a vacuum cleaner, this is not what you get your wife for her birthday, okay? I was devastated. I felt like crying and throwing it back in his face. So I look at him and he's like this. I had no idea that he just blew this, okay? He must have heard me say, as we were setting up house after all our wedding showers and everything, that I didn't get a food processor. And I said, I need a food processor. He's a guy. She needs a food processor, okay? And she has to need a food processor. But there's no way to get your wife for her birthday. So I said, thank you, honey. I needed a food processor. He left the room, and I called my friend Esther. I go, Esther, Yakov just gave me my birthday present. She goes, what'd you get? What'd you get? I said, a food processor. She goes, oh, you poor thing. I'll take care of it. Okay? So she told her husband, they've been married a couple years before us. She told her husband, Ephraim, who worked with my husband, what happened. And he waited a couple of weeks, and he mentioned in passing that women like perfume and jewelry for a present. I was like, perfume and jewelry. Okay? Okay. So the next time we got had the occasion to celebrate, he got me perfume. And the next time he got me perfume, and the next time he got me perfume, I said, honey, you just use a tiny little bit. Okay, now we got the jewelry, okay? Now we got the jewelry, and you're still turning back. Okay, got it, right? Perfume and jewelry, okay? Okay. So again, you have to help him understand what makes you happy, okay? All right, he's not a mind reader. Okay. All right. So now I'm going to give a little bit of, it's a single guy, so I want to give a little bit of advice about dating. We have certain rules when we set people up to get married. We have certain rules. One of the rules is, it's called the three-time rule. The three-time rule means if we set you up, you must go out three times. You must go out three times unless you're disgusted. Okay? Unless the person disgusts you, you go out three times. Why? Are you yourself on the first date? Nobody's themselves on the first date. You can't decide after the first date. Nobody's themselves. Everybody's nervous, okay, right? Second date, a little bit better. But the third date, you already have a sense. Do I want to, I'm telling you, I was completely pushed into the first date. After the first date. I was pushed into the first date, too. So I met my husband's friend, and he set me up with my husband. It's his best friend. And I went out with him. And after the first date, the way it works in the traditional dating system is, after the date is over, that's another rule, is you don't make a second date. You don't make a second date with each other. Why? What you do is you get back to the person who set you up. Because in the traditional Jewish world, it's a series of blind dates. That's how it usually works. It can, there's many different, you know, variations of this. But in general, it's blind dating with a heart. So I know a guy, I know a girl, I'll set them up. When I set them up, just to backtrack a little bit, when I set them up, I also, one of the rules, what I have is, ideally they should not talk on the phone before the first date. Ideally. They shouldn't talk on the phone. Why? Unless they're just making, like, arrangements. Why? Because I know people who, before they met, talked on the phone for hours and hours and hours, night after night after night. So first of all, on the first date, there's nothing else to talk about. And also, some people are just good on the phone, and some people don't do good phone, okay? And so you can't tell on the phone, really, who this person is. The woman will have this emotional attachment to the guy, and before they even went out, and this is an emotional attachment that should not be there, because, again, if you don't really know on the phone in terms of what's going on, and it's a lot of waste of time and energy and hours, don't do it. Don't talk for hours and hours on the phone. It's a big mistake. It's a big mistake. I always pitch it to the guy first before the girl. If I have an idea in terms of setting two people up, I ask the guy first if he's interested in the girl. Why? In general, there are exceptions. If I go to the girl first and I say to her, you know, about a guy, right? Wait, let's get a guy and a girl. What's your name?
Adam.
And what's your name?
What
is it?
Sophia.
Okay. So imagine, right, you take my dating workshop, da, 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 and then I say to Sophia, I think I've got a guy for you. Like, he's a really nice guy. His name is Adam. What do you do, Adam?
I'm a student.
At YU? He's a student at YU. Okay, what are you studying?
Economics.
He's studying economics. Well, he's got a future here. Okay, okay, fine. So Sophia says, wow, it sounds really good. I'm interested. And then I go to Adam. I go, Adam, I got this girl for you. Sophia, what do you do, Sophia?
Jewish major at Stern.
Right, she's a Jewish major at Stern, and Adam goes, you know what, she sounds like a nice girl, but I don't think she's for me. You know, whatever, I saw her, well, whatever, she's not for me. So now I got to go back to Sophia and break the news, right? So I go to Sophia, you know, and so like, Adam's not interested. She's devastated, okay? She's been writing, this is Adam, done, okay, like already. She's got a whole life planned with this guy, okay? But if I go to the guy, I go, Adam, you know, I've got this girl, Sophia, for you. Well, what do you think? You know, tell her, whatever, Jewish studies major. She goes, great, great, I'm into it. And then I go to Sophia, and she goes, no, I don't think he's for me. Then I go back to Adam, he goes, what girl? Like, he doesn't even have a plan. Okay? You understand? Okay? She's already planned the whole life. All right? All right. So, because women and men are very different when it comes to these relationships in general. Did you ever look at people's wedding albums? I love looking at people's wedding albums. It looks fun, okay? What does the guy look like walking down the aisle, and what does the girl look like? What does the guy look like? He looks like he's walking to the gallows, and he looks like a deer in the headlights. Okay? He looks, what does the girl look like? Okay, like, she's like, I'm like smiling down the aisle, and my husband looks like he's taking the last walk. Okay? Why? I heard a rabbi talk about this once. He said, poor girl, this is the culmination of playing Barbie and Ken since she was 4 years old, thinking about getting married. For a man, this is the first moment he ever thought about it in his life. Okay? All right, so we set them up, and you shouldn't talk on the phone, you meet, and after the first date, oh, so what should you do on the date? Don't go to a movie. Bad choice. Why shouldn't you go to a movie? Right, you stand in line, you go to a Woody Allen film. So what do you talk about in line? The other Woody Allen films you saw. Now you see the Woody Allen film, right? You're not talking to you in the movie, or people shush you. And after the movie, what do you talk about? The movie you just saw. So now you know a lot about Woody Allen, you don't know anything about the guy, okay, or the girl. So you want to go and put yourself into a situation where you really get to know who you are, each other are, and the essence of who you are. The first date is just you like each other. Just you like them, right? You like them. The second date already, you should be getting more into like what makes this person tick. You want to get to the essence. You want to be efficient in dating. You don't want to waste anybody's time. Do not waste anybody's time. And don't get into this like, well, if it doesn't work out, we'll just be friends. All right? So I know you probably don't agree with me, but there is really no such thing as a purely platonic relationship between a man and a woman. This just friend stuff is really not true. Everybody's kidding themselves, and it's only distracting you really from the ultimate relationship that you can have. There was a video that went around recently on Facebook about this guy on campus. Did you see it?
Yeah.
And he's doing this film. How many people saw this film? Like, was it great?
Yeah.
So he saw this. For those of you who didn't see it, this guy on campus was making this film. Can men and women just be friends? And he's interviewing everybody, and all the girls are saying what?
Yeah,
of course we can just be friends. And all the guys are saying what?
No
way. Okay? No way. And then he goes back to the girls, and he says to them, well, you know, tell me about some guy that you're going, oh, yeah, Josh and I are good friends. We're like really close friends. And they said, what if Josh, do you think Josh has any feelings or romantic feelings towards you? And they're like, well, maybe a little. And if you ever gave him any encouragement, you think he'd say like, oh no, we're just friends, or would he jump at it? And the girls are like, he would jump at it, okay? I remember there was a library, and there's a guy and a girl, they're friends, and they're studying, remember they're part of the movie, and the film, and he says to the guy, you know, can men and women just be friends? And the girl goes, yeah, for sure. And he says to the guy, well, if she ever said, like, let's be more romantic, would you? He goes, of course, look at her. Like, and she's like freaked out. Okay, you're not looking for more friends, all right? You have friends. You're not looking for... And again, there's no such thing as a purely platonic relationship between a guy and a girl. God made it that way. There's that interest that's going on there. That's good. But be very careful with it. Be very, very careful out there. Because it's really... And again, I'm generalizing. For a woman cannot separate the physical and the emotional. She can pretend that it's Sex in the City and that she can just use men the way men use women, but it's just not true. For a woman, when physical intimacy comes in, your emotions are also there. It's true. For a guy, he can separate it. Men are unbelievable how they can compartmentalize their life. It's unbelievable. A man could be having a fight with his wife, and then they go to sleep, and then he wants to be with her, and she's like, excuse me. We're fighting. And he goes, well, what does that have to do with this? Okay? What are you talking about? Okay? So for a woman, everything has to do with everything. Okay? And for a man, there's this, there's this, there's this, and he compartmentalizes. But that's not the way girls are. Everything has to do with everything. You didn't change the light bulb, she's not sleeping with you. Okay? Okay, that's the way it goes. Okay, in marriage. All right? And he's like, what does that have to do with this? Why? Because for her, the light bulb is not just a light bulb. The light bulb symbolizes everything wrong in our marriage, okay? And you didn't change the light bulb because you don't care about me, you don't think about me, you got it? For the man, it's just a light bulb, all right? But that's not it. It's for girls. For girls, everything has to do with everything. At the end of the day, you don't make a second date. Why? Because imagine, okay, Sophia and Adam go out, all right? One of these days I'm going to pick out two people and they're actually going to go out and get married. That'll be a great story. That's never happened. Okay. So imagine Sophia and Adam go out, and after the date is over, so Adam likes Sophia, right? She's a pretty girl. And Adam says to Sophia, so would you like to go out again, you know, Thursday night? And Sophia really is not interested. He's a nice guy, but it wasn't for her. And she's like, Well, okay. And now Adam is walking away going, okay, she's into it. And she's not into it, but she just felt uncomfortable to say no to the poor guy, right? Or that she has an excuse, she's washing her hair for the next 7 Thursdays, okay? So what you do is you just say thank you very much, the date is over, and you get back to me if I set you up. And you call me up. So imagine you call me up, this is great, I'm really into it, you call me up, it's great, now you make a second date. But imagine that Sophia is said, nice guy, but I'm not into it. So I shouldn't have to tell the guy. Why should I have to hurt him? They just went out once or twice. I'm the one who breaks the news, and I say, you know, Adam, she really had a good time. She just doesn't see this as a long-term thing, all right? And you're the person who is not only the person to break the news, but you're also, if they're dating, you're the person also that you go back to see how things are going. Like, if a girl, like, I've had girls call me up, like, I don't know, I don't think I want to go out with him again. I'm like, why not? And she'll say, well, he wants to live in Israel. Like, I don't want to live in Israel. And I'll call up the guy, and I'll go, what do you mean you want to live in Israel? He goes, well, I don't plan to live in Israel, but I just thought it was maybe one day. So then I go back to her, well, maybe one day, that's not what he really meant. So you're there to also smooth things over as well. And there are times where people need a push, especially men. Okay, some guys just need a little encouragement. I have pushed men down the aisle. You can do this, okay? And they need a little bit of encouragement. And so you're there as the person who set the person up, the shopkin, the matchmaker, to help people and to give clarity to people. And I'm telling you, it's a responsibility, and you have to have a sensitivity to help people to move in the right direction. All right. Okay, we'll just end with a story, then I'll take questions, if there's any questions. So, this is a true story that just happened. So I was, I made these trips to Israel. I have a lot of women on, last year we brought 1,000 women from 7 different countries. It's like a birthright for mothers, and they only pay the airfare. It's a free trip. We bring them for a 9-day trip to Israel. It's very transformational for them. So, anybody ever go on H.com? H.com? Okay. So on H.com, I have this video blog. It's called Lori Almost Lies. Okay. And so it's giving me a little bit of a goofy theme in the Jewish world. So H.com, they wanted to do a mission also. They wanted to do a trip. And they planned it in between my 2 trips because they knew I'd be in Israel and I could appear on the mission. Got it? So I had 200 women, 200 women. And then in between was this H.com mission. So I get on the bus with the H.com mission. How many people are on the bus? 17, okay? There's 17 people on this trip. And so I had 200 women, I had 200 were coming, and now there's 17 people, so I'm thinking, they don't need me on the bus. Like, this is a waste of my time, okay? They don't need me. They have Rabbi Solomon, they have Ken Spiro, they don't need me, and like, what am I doing here? So that was the not good part of my brain. The best part of my brain clicked in and said, Lori, you're on this bus, God put you here, and you've got to figure out why you're here, okay? Figure it out. So it became like a contest. I'm a little bit competitive, and I'm like, I'm going to figure out why Hashem put me on this bus. So now we're on the bus, and we have a stop. We go to Hebron. And I'm thinking, well, maybe it's because I haven't been to Hebron a long time. But no, there's got to be something more. I go up to a guy from the bus. I go, hi, I'm Lori Polanyi. He goes, yeah, I know who you are. I said, you know, tell me about yourself. So it turns out the guy's 42, never been married, nice looking, good job, bal tshuva, good guy, like, there were angels singing in heaven, and a beam of light was coming down, okay? Like, you don't get a guy with, like a really normal guy. Normal, okay? Remember, all I want is a normal guy. That's what girls say. I watched him all day long, and I went up to him at the end of the day, and I said, you know what? I think I got a girl for you. So he was very flattered. I wanted to set him up. I said, who's your rabbi? He immediately gave me his name and number, which is also a good sign. If I ask a guy, who's your rabbi? He goes, I don't really have a rabbi. Thank you very much. Right, I'll pass. Like, I'll move on also. Right? It's very good. It's very important for a man to have a rabbi. A guy without a rabbi thinks he's God. Okay? And this is not a good thing. Every guy needs a guy, rabbi to keep him straight. So he immediately had the name of his rabbi. He gave me the name of his rabbi. My daughter, Brachaleia, she's 16. She says, Ima, call the rabbi now. Don't wait till you get back to the States. Why? Because she knows me. I'm going to get back to the States. I'm going to get busy. I'm going to forget. And that's who I am. So I said, fine. She said, run to do a mitzvah. So I call up the rabbi from Israel, and the rabbi confirms this is a great guy. Why did nobody scoop up this guy? If this guy was in New York, he had been married years ago. Why did nobody scoop him up? Because nobody knows he exists. He lives in Champaign, Illinois. Okay? He works for the University of Chicago, Champaign, Illinois. Nobody knows he exists. He's off of everybody's radar. Okay? He became from because there was a college outreach rabbi there, and all the college kids were attracted to him. He worked at the college, and he got caught up in a terror, and he became religious, right? Shomer Shabbos. So I call up the girl that I'm picking up. The girl's name is Melanie. She's somebody I met in Denver, Colorado. She was 30 at the time. She became Shomer Shabbos. She moved to New York to date, right? Because this is the place to date, okay? 10 years later, she's been dating for 10 years. 10 years. She didn't meet anybody. She never met anybody to marry. She became one of the deans of Truro College. She's very accomplished. She's a doctorate in psychology. She's fabulous. I call her up. I go, Mel, I got a guy for you. She goes, it's too late. I gave up. She was like, I've been dating in New York for 10 years. I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I can serve Hashem as a single woman. I can do kindness. I can have friends. I have a great friend. I have a wonderful community. I have a good job. I'm done. I said, Mel, trust me. Trust me. She said, okay. He flew to New York. They went out. They met in Chicago. They came to us in D.C. And March 18th, please God, they're getting married. All right? So what does this tell you? They're so happy, I can't even tell you. What does this teach you? For number one, it teaches you, never give up. Okay? Never, ever give up. And number two, when you're in a situation, never think it's a waste of your time. God puts you into the situation for a reason. Even when you're on a bad date, right? You're supposed to learn from this date. Why did God put you in this situation? What are you supposed to learn from it? Don't write anything off. It's all messages from the Almighty. Better to get his message very early on. Okay? Got it? All right. And you also have to know that in the end, right, you go to this shopping, your parents help you with this, this way you're going to network all these things. In the end, God runs the world. God runs the world. When I was first dating, I was like relying on my friends. And then it was like a few guys in, I realized, I remember saying to the Almighty, I am not doing this for years, okay? I'm not one of those girls who could date for years. I have plans. I have things I want to do. I need to be married. And I totally gave it to God that he has to cut, that you have to send me the right guy. And very soon after that, I met my husband. I definitely did. I was in Israel. I did this 40 days at the Kotel. You heard this thing, okay? You go 40 days straight to the Kotel, and your prayers are supposed to be answered. I went 40 days straight to the Kotel, and that meant if I had Shabbos in Harnov, I walked in on Shabbos day. It takes a while to walk in from Harnov, and I never missed a day. And what happens, it's not a slot machine. You go 40 days, ching, 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 and you get the guy, okay? It's not like that. What happens is you go, and every day, and after a while, Hashem becomes your best friend. And you look around, you see other people that you see keep continually every day, you know they're doing 40 days as well. You get very close to the Almighty. Because in the end, this whole world is about you and God. God is only bringing you everybody into your life, including the person you're going to marry, to bring you to the relationship, the ultimate relationship between you and your Creator. All right. Thank you very much. Shavua Tov. I will take questions. If you have questions, I'm happy to answer. Yes.
Just to clarify, when you say 3 days,
unless you're disgusted.
So what does that mean?
What is disgusted? Okay. So did anybody ever see When Harry Met Sally?
No.
Right. Remember that scene? Not that scene. The other scene, okay? Remember the scene where Harry and Sally, you know the premise of When Harry Met Sally? They're friends, okay? Okay, so it's like that, you can't just be friends, okay? They're friends. Anyway, so When Harry Met Sally, so they're both dating other people because they're friends. And Sally says, they get together for dinner one night, and Sally says to Harry, I had the worst date ever today. And Harry goes, no, I had the worst date ever today. She goes, I'm telling you, I had the worst date ever. He goes, prove it. She goes, after dinner, he plucked a hair out of my head and began flossing with it. Okay? That's disgusting, okay? That guy doesn't get a second date, okay? But if he's nervous and he's awkward and he didn't open the door and something happened, okay? The guy gets a second date. You're not disgusted, okay? You got to give the guy more time.
But there are, for example, I mean, I'm just speaking openly here.
Yes.
There'll probably be, I don't know whether this is more applies to men than women, but let's say you just don't like your nose, so
right.
You know, you just can't get, you know.
You can't get past your nose.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And the captain is telling you, if you have to meet again, you say, look, I know, but this is just not, you know,
right.
I can't do this.
Right.
So, what do you do?
Okay, so that's a good question. So I remember sitting down with a guy, And he was sending me, I would say, what kind of girl are you looking for? If somebody sent it to me, what kind of girl are you looking for? He starts telling me, and then he becomes very apologetic. He goes, and I just feel like, you know, I just, you know, she has to be pretty, and I have to be attractive. But I know that's like shallow, because I know those are, I go, no. Those are important things. You must be attracted to them. You're not allowed to marry somebody unless you're attracted. She has good needles. After dating for a while, like, she's so good and she's like this, but I'm just not attracted. It's not it. You don't marry her, okay? But after the first date, right, and if it's just the nose, because people can change their nose, okay? If it's just the nose, I would say to you, if I was the person sending you off, I would say to you, well, tell me the good things about her. And if she had a different nose, would everything be different? Like, maybe keep going, okay? If it's the nose, all right? Because noses can change. That's, like, a whole thing. But I have to tell you, I do, even though I'm very, very much, I'm not here to tell the guy what he's attracted to, right? Because everybody's, right? But I do take it with a grain of salt. A guy came to me years ago, and he said he wants to get married, and he said, I'm just telling you, I'm only attracted to very thin, farty-looking girls, okay? Like, very dark, thin, farty girls. That's what he says to me, okay? That's, I'm only attracted to that. And I said, listen, I'm not here to tell you what you're attracted to. And he goes, I don't want a girl with any baggage, okay? Can't be that I've been married before, no baggage whatsoever. Who did he marry?
White.
Blonde, not thin, ex-nun, okay? who was married before and has a kid. You couldn't get more opposite than what he described, okay? Like, talk about baggage, okay? She was a nun. She left being a nun. She ended up getting married, had a kid. She converted to Judaism. Like, hello, okay? You can't get more opposite than what he described. And they're happily married today. So I take it with a grain of salt, but I'm not here to tell a guy. If a guy says he's not attractive after you're going out, I would say to you, I would still do it. You're not disgusted. You're just not attracted. You know, the nose thing bothers you. I would definitely tell you to do 3 dates. After 3 dates, you're still not attracted, then you pass. Then you move on. You really, you know, this is just, that's my opinion. I might be wrong, but physical attraction is a very, very important thing. And if you've gone out for a while and you're not attracted, whether it's the guy or the girl, this is not the person to marry. This is a very, 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 very important part of a marriage. Yes?
What if he's not the right person and you guys have gone on these dates and you feel, you know, you've really made a connection with this person, but you yourself don't feel ready or don't think you're ready to be in a relationship or to go farther with
him? Then why did you start dating? If you're not ready to get married, what is this, recreation time? Okay? You're wasting everybody's time. You're playing with everybody's emotions. The great thing about the traditional Jewish dating system is you're both into commitment from date one. You may not commit to each other, but you're both into commitment. I ask a guy, like, you know, if he wants to be safe, I go, you want to get married? He goes, well, you know, not really, but I go, then I go to somebody else, okay? Like, what do you want from me? I'm not going to set girls up just to waste their time with you. But even if somebody says they're dating for recreation, if they really meet the right person, they're going to get married. But I don't set up anybody unless they're ready to get married. Yes? It's very different. I knew after the third day I was going to spend the rest of my life with my husband. Now, I've really done my homework. After 3 dates, I knew I was going to spend the rest of my life. I took him longer. It took him 8 dates. Okay? It's a little bit slow on the uptake there. But,
and how long should they be? How, so they're not making each other's time. It's going in that direction. How many weeks, months, like, when do you think you're
going to get engaged? I'm telling you, I did surveys. I have a lot of Shabbos guests, and I often ask them one of those get-to-know-you questions for a married couple is, how did you meet? So why is that a good question? Because they start telling us, oh, when I was in college, or whatever, so you find out about them, and then they get all mushy-gushy to each other, okay? Like, it's really a nice get-to-know-you question. And then I ask them, when did you know he was the one? When did you know she was the one? Consistently, people will say, on the first date. Or within the first month. And even though they dated for 4 years and lived together for 2 years and then got married, okay, they really knew right away. They knew. Once you know, don't just get, we have a rule also, short engagements, long marriages, okay? Don't be engaged for a long time. Once you get engaged, get married. Engagements are not fun times. You're not dating, right? You're not married. It's in between. It's like being a teenager. You're not a kid and you're not an adult. You're in between. In between is not fun. It can bring out a lot of bad things. Short engagements, long marriages.
Never dating, not long dating.
It depends. Some people need to date for a long time before they know. Some people have, Yeah, everybody's individual. Some people have a lot of baggage. Some people have parents who are like nutty, okay? So it depends. But there's this guy and this girl. This guy knew after the first date with her, I knew if he was attracted to her, it's a done deal, okay? What, if he was attracted to her, I knew it was done. She took longer. Why? Because she had already given up. I knew she was going to take longer. She says, I just, because she was so hurt after 10 years of this game here in New York, that she was done. And so for her, even if she saw all the good things about him, she was scared. So she's the one who needed the encouragement. And I did encourage her. And I walked her through it and talked her through it. And she's the one who needed the push. But once she got over her stuff, it was done. Yes?
Yeah, what were you feeling when you were saying, physical attraction, shared goals, you want to make them happy over the goals,
yeah.
Let's say the feelings aren't there.
You have all these things, but you have no feelings?
Yeah. I've heard a number of guys who tell me this. They're attracted to the girl physically. They do all the same things, but either they say this chemistry, clicking, that personal affection.
And guys are saying this. What a shocker, huh? Okay? All these things. They have the same goals and all these things, but I just don't have...
I'm a girl saying this also.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really?
Girl is
saying what?
There's something, everything's there.
Something's missing. There's something. Okay. So, when people come to me and they've got this, so you got to find out what is that something. Sometimes it's just a fairy tale. They're waiting, they think this is a romantic comedy, okay? This is not, Meg Ryan is not in your life, okay? This is not a romantic comedy. This is real life. This is real life. So you have to find out from that person, and that's why it's good to have somebody coaching you and helping you, because we are not objective about our lives, we are very subjective, and it's good to have somebody to talk to who's going to find out what is that thing missing. Don't ask your girlfriend. They have their own agenda. They have their own stuff, okay? Don't ask them. You should ask somebody who you feel has wisdom, who will be able to talk it through for you. I have to tell you, this girl, there was something. She was like, I don't know, she was blocked. So I did a couple of things. One is I got their handwriting done. They got their handwriting done, and the person who had their handwriting, your handwriting's like your fingerprint, said to her, this is the thing that's bothering you, and if you could get over this, it'll be fine. And once she clarified this is the thing that was bothering her, once she got over it, everything was great. We're good to go. You have to have somebody to talk to. Something missing. There's something missing. Oh, really? That's why people are like 49 and still not married, okay? There's always something. And guys often say to my husband, I remember we did this whole thing in South Africa. We did a whole show of telling singles in South Africa. And the guys were lined up talking to my husband afterwards. And every guy had the same question. Well, how do I know the girl I'm dating is the one for me? How do I know there's not somebody better out there? I have to go, great! Get a transatlantic ticket, go to England, go to Australia, go to the United States, go to Canada. By the time you get back, she's gone, okay? She's marrying somebody else. How do I know there's not somebody better out there? I'm telling you. Somebody wrote to Rabbi Moshe Feinstein years ago. He was the greatest rabbi of the past generation. And he said to him, I don't know if the girl I'm dating is the girl for me. We would like to move into a house with a married couple. We will live in we will be in separate bedrooms, we'll lock doors, separate parts of the house. But I want to live with her to see, like, is she really the one? Is she going to be, like, to see her every day, not just in a dating situation? Rav Moshe Feinstein said, according to Jewish law, with certain parameters, you could do this. But he told him, you will find nothing else out. You will not get any more clarity than you have now. He said, you see a person, you see she's from a good family, you see she has good qualities, you're physically attracted to her, you have the same goals and values. He said, then you will know that she was the one sent from heaven. Walk simply with God. Everybody's overthinking this, I'm telling you. Walk simply with God.
So would you say somebody had all these things and they're physically attracted, etc., and they're looking to get married, and they say, I'm not in love with this person?
I was not in love with my husband when we got married. I was not, first of all, we don't believe you fall in love. In Judaism, you fall into a pit, okay? It's like this thing you blindly fall into, all right? Love is not, like, there's a difference between love and infatuation.
You recommend somebody get married even though they don't
How many people here have been in love? How many people have been infatuated? Everybody put up their hand because everybody's been infatuated, okay? So when you were infatuated, did you walk around telling your girlfriend, I'm so infatuated. I'm falling in infatuation. What do you know?
No, you're like,
I'm in love. You thought you were in love. How do you know it wasn't in love? It was infatuation. It ended. That was your first sign, okay? But also, infatuation feels just like love. It looks just like love, but it's counterfeit. If you hold it up to the light, it ain't love. What's infatuation? When somebody comes to me, one of the signs of infatuation is, he's perfect. She's perfect. You're not looking for the perfect person. You're looking for the person perfect for you.
Yes.
And the person perfect for you is not a perfect person. We don't grow through our spouse's good qualities. We grow through their challenging qualities. My spouse's good qualities are like the whipped cream on the hot chocolate. Yummy, yum, yum. Enjoy. But I grow through, you really grow through their challenging qualities. If you have to deal with somebody's challenging qualities, what do you have to draw upon within yourself? What do you have to be?
Patient.
What else? Compassionate. What else?
Understanding.
What else? Supportive. Sensitive. That equals a good person. Do you understand? It's through our spouse's good qualities that we become great people. So I do their bad qualities, do their challenging qualities. It's not their good qualities that help you to grow. Your good qualities, again, are like God's gift to you. But that's not how you grow. You grow through their challenging qualities.
Guys can make a distinction between physicality and emotions. Guys can know
infatuation.
They can separate. Girl's really hot, but I have no respect for her at all. Guys say this all the time.
Right.
Infatuated with her, I love her all.
Right.
I love her a lot. But, you know,
no, this is not a thing I don't buy at all. Before marriage, I'm telling you, remember the thing I said at the beginning when we're at a wedding and like, I love him, I love her, the bride and groom? They don't know what love is. It's like, really, like you
at a, so what do you call,
well, the Robertson, agree? Okay? How many years have you been married, Robertson? 38 years.
So what do you call this feeling of affection? It's just made up infatuation. It's just childish stupidity.
A lot of this stuff is just, again, for a lot of this, again, infatuation, a lot of it's coming from is lust, okay? A lot of it, and it's confusing to a person. Again, a lot of things, a lot of people are not clear about what is marriage and what is love. They're just like, all these other factors are playing with their head. And their girlfriends, and their guyfriends, and everybody's opinion, and the romantic comedies, and the magazines, and all the stuff. There's no clarity. And they get into a situation that they don't get out of. Once the physical stuff comes in, there is no clarity whatsoever. Okay? And now you're making the greatest decision of your life with no clarity whatsoever, and yet you've rationalized that you're clear, but you're not, because you have nobody really guiding you. It's a mess. It's a mess out there. I'm telling you, you see a person, all those three questions are really where it's at. Goals and values. You have to know who you are and where you're going. And then you have to find out, does that person share those goals and values? You're physically attracted to them. For a girl, she respects him. And for a guy, will you be happy making her happy for the rest of your life? If you answer all those three yes, this is the one. Then walk simply with God. Don't make anybody nuts. Or pass. Right? See if there's somebody better out there. Good luck. And welcome to the Upper West Side. Yes.
You kind of covered this a little bit, and I don't feel I'm ready to go dating yet.
Then don't, yeah.
I like to be afraid that, like, the right person might find the wrong person, and then I won't be able to find anyone because the right person didn't find anyone because they didn't find me because I wasn't dating.
You're definitely not ready to date. Yes. When you're dating?
Yes.
So when you're dating, you see good stuff and you see not so good stuff. You have to know that what everybody's got their list of what they're looking for. Your list should be based on not what you want, but what you need. I want. Well, what do you need? You have to get to know who you are first, your good qualities and your challenging qualities, to know what you need. And then when you have your list, let's say you have 10 things on your list, then I will ask you, and I would ask you, what are the top three? And you're like, what do you mean? I go, what are the non-negotiables? What, if that guy doesn't have 1, 2, and 3, he doesn't get a second date. He doesn't even get a first date, okay? They're non-negotiable. When you have your list, and you should have your list, I would ask you to be ruthless and to prioritize the list. This is more important than this. Yeah, but you want everything. Guess what? You're not going to get everything. You don't get everything. What are the things I can't live without down to, it'd be nice to have, but I may not get it. There was a guy we knew in Toronto, and he was dating, and he was a business consultant. He had his list. He was very organized. He was dating a girl, but there was something stopping him. Something was missing, all right? He sat down with a rabbi, Rabbi Shalom Schwartz, who used to run HTOR in Toronto, and he said to the rabbi, I know she doesn't have everything, But I just can't, she doesn't have everything on my list, but I know I'm not going to get everything, but something's stopping me. So Rabbi Schwartz said, prioritize your list. That, the most important thing, downs would be nice to have. Turns out, she had 7 out of 10 things on the list, but it was the bottom 7. And he said to the guy, what would you rather have, the top 3 or the bottom 7? So he didn't marry her, and he married somebody else. Do you hear? You got to do the work first. Don't wait. Do the work before you date. So your objective. If you're in the middle of a relationship, if you do this, it's going to be very not objective. Okay? Because you're basing it on that person. Yes?
How do we know we're making our list right? If we're making our list based on what we think we actually need.
Okay, so there is a dating workshop where it's a long workshop that I give, where in the end you end up with a list. And I recommend this workshop. It's actually online. You go to, it's, now I don't have to give it anymore, thank God, because it's just a long, complicated workshop. So I just send people to this website. It's called projectsinai.org, and you search dating. Projectsinai.org, you search dating. It's a 3-part workshop. I don't need to set anybody up anymore until they've taken the workshop. It's free. It's a free workshop. You take the workshop because it gives you clarity. It will help you, and it will help me. I don't even set anybody up unless it's something like, wow, like, you know, I know for sure. It gives you clarity. Clarity is everything. Yeah.
Okay, but clearly you're very much in tune with what people need, how to talk to guys and girls, right? The problem I have is every parent, uncle, aunt, grandparent, friend, colleague, living under the sun is a matchmaker.
Right.
So I just say, I want to set you up with my friend.
Right.
If they run into a problem, they come back to me because they're supposed to talk to a
right.
They can set them up.
Right.
I don't know what to say to them.
Right.
And usually they'll say, I didn't like the guy. Okay, I'll go back to the guy and say, sorry, she didn't like you. Okay, now I didn't do the right thing.
Right.
You know what I mean? I don't know.
Okay.
99.9% of the people who are matchmakers don't know them.
Right.
They're not.
I know.
This is a huge issue.
I know, it's a huge issue. So there is somebody who called me the other day, and they said, I set this guy and girl up, but now I'm an amateur. I don't know what I'm doing. Help. Will you step in? I said, yes, I'll step in. So, which is a little bit harder, though, because I stepped in, and I was like, I wouldn't have set these 2 people up, okay? In the end, you know, things did not work out. And there are times to stop it, too, when you're the matchmaker. There are times when you see it's not good and to say, like, you know what, you should pass, even though I set you up. I'm not here for another notch in my belt, okay? I only want you to be happy. So I would say that you should have somebody in your life. If you're the person who set them up, for example, you should also have the humility to know that maybe they should go to somebody. You introduce them. No, but you can introduce them. No, but you can introduce them and say, like, you know what, Rabbi so-and-so or Rabbi so-and-so should be the person, the point person. Or you should go to that Rabbi and Rabbi and say, I thought of this guy and for this girl. I think you'd be much better at setting them up. What do you think? It would be good. But, yes, everybody and their brother and their uncle is a matchmaker. But I have to tell you, I know people who are set up by bizarre people and in a bizarre way and were happily married. You never know who's going to be God's, you know, little shaliach there. Yeah.
How much of a factor do you think person's family slash past would be in play. Because some people have very checkered past and turn to weakness with the other journey. Or somebody might have very, very colorful family.
Right.
So how much of a factor should I share? I don't want to say, look, mother is totally not, she used to be a typical family. I mean, like, so should that be a serious issue or should that not?
Okay, so right? Everybody's got a past. Everybody's got a past. You definitely, it's a factor. How much do you weigh that factor in is very, very independent depending on the situation. I know somebody who, like for us, in our family, now my kids are starting to get into that parsha. Like, none of my kids are married yet, but they're starting to get into it. We're very open. We're very, like, we're both Jewish, like my husband and myself. My kids are FFB, but we're very, like we know that people have passed and people have their things, and we're very forgiving about that. We're not like, shh. So I know people who are like that. So I tell my kids definitely that if you marry somebody whose parents are happily married, you have a giant step forward towards possibly having a happy marriage yourself. It's not a guarantee. But if they are, it's kind of like a point system. If the parents are still married of that person and they're happily married, then there's a good chance that person grew up in an emotionally healthy house. It's good to marry somebody who's emotionally healthy. Does that mean people who are not emotionally healthy or whose parents are divorced or unhappily married shouldn't get married? They should get married. But you have to factor that in. It's just a factor. There are many factors, 1,000 factors. But there are certain things that go along with it. You have to decide for yourself what you can handle. I know somebody who wants to marry somebody from a colorful family. Their worst fear is that marriage will be boring. Okay? All right? So I thought of this guy for her. The guy is like, grew up in Kuwait, okay? He's like, his mother is like, you know, covers her hair because she's a Muslim, okay? And for this girl, this would be a great match. Why? Because her fear is that marriage will be boring. This will not be boring, okay? Do you understand?
I just thought of my answer. Because me personally, myself, my parents always argue about this. They're like, family is very, very important. You know, where they came from, not in the book. I'm marrying the family.
That's very naive.
Might reflect.
No. That's very naive. You marry the girl, but you marry the girl, you marry into a family. You are going to have to deal with their family. Don't take it lightly. You have to deal with their family.
So I said deal with your family, but say, for example, if somebody comes to a divorced family, I tell the girl's divorced, the girl must be totally nuts because the parents are divorced, and write it off.
No. Just because you're a divorced family doesn't mean the girl's nuts. It's a factor. It's a factor. So you find out how long were they married, what's the situation, what's going on, you try to assess. Some people come out of a divorce situation completely compelled to have a good marriage and will work like crazy because of that example, they will never get divorced. Other people are damaged goods, right? And they're afraid to get married. You have to assess how did this person react. Some people coming from adversity made them incredibly compassionate and sensitive and strong people. That's a good person. Some people come from the same situation and they're broken people. So you have to assess who's in front of you.
So what do you say about a personalized relationship? It's all there and the family's totally black.
The family's what? Okay, so first of all, it's much easier dealing with a crazy family if they live out of town, okay? Really. I know somebody who is marrying a guy, and he's got a mother from, like, you know what, okay? And I said, don't ever live in the same city as your mother-in-law. I said, you're going to be fine, but don't you ever live in the same city as your mother-in-law. I said, remember these words, okay? Because some people I tell that to, and they later on, like, oh, it'll be fine, and it's not fine, okay? Some mother-in-laws are better to be in another town. It's much better. Also, I know a guy who was interested in going out with a certain girl, and I said, I just know that her mother is very judgmental. She's very judgmental. And he's fine with that. He said, he's very smart. He said, if I was the girl, I would not go into that situation. I said, if I was the girl, a girl cannot handle, would have a very hard time handling a judgmental mother-in-law. But a guy, if his mother-in-law is judgmental, it's kind of like, well, like, you know, take a number, okay? Like, everybody's like that, all right? So it's not a big deal. But for a girl, it would be much harder, right? I know a girl, and there's no way she would ever handle a judgmental mother-in-law, and I would look to the mother in every situation for her. Because she's a girl that, if any judgment, she would freak out if she felt judged at all. You got to know the individual, okay? You got to know the individual. Yes? Yeah.
Because especially here on the, like, Upper West Side, like, they're like, I guess, you know,
what?
In Israel, you know, like, age difference, you know, like, it's kind of like you can pull a little bit older than girl. Like, do you have any advice about
that? Okay, so this is a funny one, too. I definitely had guys who are like 59, 60, 62, who tell me they're looking for a girl in her late 20s, okay? And I say, how many zeros do you have after your name, okay? If you have a lot of zeros after your name, you're very, very wealthy, okay, maybe a girl is going to grow. Like, really? Okay, you're 62 and you want a girl in her late 20s? Like, really? Okay? All right. So, in terms of age difference, I knew that it would be better for me to marry an older guy. Why? I have a very strong personality. Did anybody notice this? Okay? I have a strong personality. A woman has to respect her husband. And I knew I would have a hard time respecting most guys because I have a strong personality. And I felt instinctively that if I married an older guy, that, and not so much, he's only 7 years older than me, but if I married somebody older, it would help me in terms of respecting him. And it's true. I know somebody else also, like, and whenever I have girls and they have strong personalities, I highly recommend that they marry an older guy. I know women who marry guys 20 and 25 years older. I'm really, 20 and 25 years older. And we're happily, happily married. It's a huge difference, and it's unusual. I happen to know quite a few of them. Like, some people very close to me. I have 2 or 3 friends close to me who all married guys 20, 25 years old. It's amazing. It's amazing. So, but it's not the norm. It's not the norm. But you have to know your personality. For some, like, I know a guy right now who was just told about a girl who's 3 years younger. And 3 years older. She's 3 years older than him. He's a guy, he's in his early 20s, and he was told about a girl 3 years older, he's fine. He's a very together guy. It doesn't bother him whatsoever. Most guys, it would bother them. It would bother them that their wife is older. It's like, it's a guy thing, okay? So, but some guys, it doesn't matter at all. I have a girl, forget about age, other things too. One of my best friends, when I was becoming religious and we were roommates together in Israel, she's very tall. She's very tall. And she was very frustrated. It was hard for her. And she had a strong personality. So there were very few guys for her to go out with, for me to go out with. And so I remember I got married first. And she said to me, she came to visit me in Toronto, and she said, every tall jerk in New York she set up with. He's tall? Oh, this is for her. Okay? Okay? It doesn't matter the personality. He's tall. So I remember, and she told me at the time, she said, she goes to this one family here in New York, and she says, oh, whenever the Russians get out of the former Soviet Union, they always go to this family for Shabbos. I like Russians. So I'm like, I said to her, I know a Russian. I knew one Russian. Okay? And I set them up based on that. Okay? I like Russians. I knew one Russian. They're both very interesting people. I said to them both, I said, you may not get married, but you'll have an interesting date. You're both interesting people. I phoned him up. I said, I've got a girl for you. He goes, okay, great. And I said, I just want to tell you she's tall. So what would most guys say? How tall? Okay? He didn't say that. He goes, oh. He got married. Okay? Because I could see this guy was a very secure guy. She's taller than him. How many girls date or marry a guy taller? He was a very secure guy. He was not insecure about the fact that she was taller. Right? He got married. They're happily married today. They live in the old city of Jerusalem. All right? And I was like, I know a Russian. Okay? Okay? So that's another thing when it comes to setting people up. The ones I really think about and is this the one, those usually don't go. The ones where just God puts it in my head, right, they go. The guy on the bus, okay? I think I've got a girl for you. Why? Because he talked about Hashem like Hashem was his best friend. And she talks the same way. He works at university, she's working at university. I was like, yay! Okay, here we go. Sorry. Yay! So now they're getting married. So the ones I think about, okay, and I really try to work out, right, those are the ones that don't work. You have to have humility to know that God wants to put people together. And he's giving you the pleasure. Like, how am I going to feel at this girl's wedding? I feel like $1 million when I set people up and I'm at their wedding. I feel great. But I know that Hashem is giving me the pleasure. He could have introduced them in 1,000 different ways. They could have met at a bus stop. Somebody else could have introduced them. He gave me the pleasure. Gave me the pleasure. Yeah.
I have a follow-up question for you, Forrest.
Yeah.
What if you meet somebody unexpectedly, and you really think they could be something, but you know that you're not ready?
You meet somebody, but you're not ready?
And you think that they could be something you'd like to date in the future, but if you wait too long, they're going to get taken away.
Why aren't you ready?
Because you know yourself. You know, like, I can be more secure than more secure.
See, it's a question, the answer, you have to know the answer to why you're not ready. You're not ready because I need to make a certain amount of money or finish my degree or whatever. Like, you have to talk it out with somebody who has some wisdom and objectivity to talk out why you think you're not ready. Like, what's the factors? I just met a girl on Shabbos here, and she said to me, she goes, her mother was like, you know, you have to finish your degree, and you got to do this, because of that. And she kept, like, her parents pushed her to keep finishing this degree, then that degree, and that internship, and that thing. She goes, by the time I finished, right, I was like, marriage was not my priority. I wanted to get married, but my parents said, no, do this, do this first. By the time, it was a mistake. Like, you have to know, like, some people, until you do this, until you do that, you're not ready. You have to know, again, you have to have somebody, you have to have a rabbi, a rebbitzin in your life to help you to understand, what do you mean you're not ready? Like, well, what's holding you back? Maybe it's true. Maybe you should be dating now. But maybe it's not true. Maybe you just got stuff in your head. Maybe society put something in your head. Do you understand? Right, so then you have to say, what do you mean, growing in what area? You're growing your whole life, my dear, okay? You never stop growing. But at a certain point, you have to get married. Yes?
What do you do if you meet somebody and you think that their personality is great, very fitting, but the hashkafa is very much different?
Right. So the first one is really having the same meaningful goals and values.
Yes.
The hashkafa falls under that category. Mm-hmm. All right? So if you're not, if you've got a guy, this person is going to be the father of your children, the grandfather of your children. She's going to be the mother of your children and the grandmother of your children. If you're on two different wavelengths in terms of the values you want to give them or the communities that you identify with, that's not a good recipe for a good marriage. All right? Never marry somebody and I will change them. Don't do it. Don't marry somebody, I will change them. Because the essence of a person doesn't change. Their occupation might change. Where they live might change. All right? Their body weight might change. Okay? There are things that change. But don't marry somebody, I will change them. That's a big, big mistake.
Two more questions.
Oh, I didn't know you were in charge. Okay, yay. Okay. Two more questions, yes.
Maybe this is a religious question. You said at first that Hashem, before you're born, like, divides your soul.
Yeah.
And put it into another person. Wouldn't that mean that there's only one right person for you?
Okay, that's a very good question. So there's a concept of your zivuk and your besheret, all right? There's one ultimate soulmate, that's your zivuk, and then there's somebody called your besheret. If the person that you marry, you're going to realize your potential through. If, for some reason, you wouldn't realize your potential by meeting your zivuk, because of the choices you made, the choices they made, then God brings somebody called your besheret. And there's a besheret for every level that you're at. Right? If I think about the guy I would have married 5 years before I met my husband, you can't even compare to my husband. All right? But at that level, that's where I was at. Do you understand? The idea is you want to make yourself a whole half to merit the other half. You merit your besheret. How do you know if somebody's your zivuk or your besheret? So there's two indicators. So one is, this is from Rabbi Mitch Mendel. So do you know, do you ever go to a wedding and the bride and groom look alike? They look like brother and sister. They look more like brother and sister than the brother and sister do, okay? So Rabbi Mendel said that's an perhaps an indication that this is a zivuk marriage, right? Because they look, because if you're one spiritually, one is also a physical resemblance. My husband and I don't look anything alike, okay? Like nothing alike. Also, a zivuk marriage is an easy, schmeasy marriage. He finishes the sentences and she starts them. You know what I'm saying? Like easy, schmeasy. So my marriage is not an easy, schmeasy marriage. It takes a lot of work and effort. It's a great marriage, thank God. But God realized that I needed this union in order to realize my potential. Do you understand? So again, if you don't marry zivuk, you marry your besheret, but then there's a different besheret for every level that you're at. But under the chuppah, Rabbi Mendel said, your besheret becomes your zivuk. Because under the chuppah, you become one soul. This is now your soulmate. Yes, last question.
Is there a possibility, you know, talking about romantic comedies and all that?
Yeah.
Is there a possibility that you meet someone and all the angels are singing and, you know, the violins are playing and it's just perfect? Or, in your opinion, it's usually there's something that you never get a perfect deal, but...
Can I tell you, if you do the homework ahead of time, you do the work ahead of time, then it's not rocket science. When you know it's the right person, you know. Again, I'm telling you, I used to think guys for years, it's ridiculous, okay? After 13, I knew I was going to spend the rest of my life with my husband because I really had done my homework. And so when that person came and I knew my top three things and I had complete clarity that this is the person, all right? If you really do your homework and you really, and don't just wait and fall in love, okay? I'm telling you, you will know.
But is it possible that you get every single thing on your list?
You're never going to get everything on your list, ever. By the top three, you better have. You can't live without those top three. You'll never get everything. And it's not a romantic comedy. This is life. Okay? Okay.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, guys. Did Brett? Thank you, guys. Did Brett? No. Okay.
Sure.
Sure. Sure. Sure.
Sure.
What do you think
happening? No happening?